Welcome to another edition or episode of Behind the Vinyl. Tonight we have the German power metal band Powerwolf. We have Matthew from the band. Look, to be honest, not really my favorite band of all time, but Matthew really was a great chat, and this album is actually really, really strong. So shout out to Mr. Janne Madsen at Sweden Rock. I'm sure he loves this record. So check it out, the new Powerwolf on Behind the Vinyl with myself and Nicholas and Matthew from Powerwolf.
All right. Hey, this is Matthew. Hello.
Hey, Matthew. How are you, man? Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Well, I'm fine. Yeah.
Good. Good.
My voice is still working, so it's all fine.
Excellent. Well, look, congratulations on your latest record, Call of the Wild. It's now out for us all to enjoy. How does that feel?
Well, of course, it feels awesome to have a new album out. Like it always feels like finally being able to, you know, share what you have been secretly working on for, you know, 1.5 years now. It just feels great to have it out. But at the same time, with, you know, the situation given currently, it also feels a bit strange, because usually we would now be out, you know, probably on a festival run, premiering the songs on stages. And right now it feels a bit like, well, you know, the album is out, we're sitting home. it's a bit unusual, let's say, like that.
Yeah. Did the whole pandemic thing, did it fasten up the writing process for this album for you?
No, as a matter of fact, we exactly stayed in schedule like we planned it way before we had been into a pandemic situation. We started writing the album in spring 2020, more or less right when first lockdown happened. Until then, we had literally been on tour, and the release was scheduled for like summer 21. So, you know, if there was an effect of the pandemic and lockdown, then it was that we had obviously more time to, you know, really focus on writing the album, which does not mean we spent longer time writing, but there was no distraction because there was nothing else we could do but, you know, writing the album. And me being the main songwriter, I even have to admit that in the beginning, this was a little of a relief, so to say. I mean, yes. Usually I'm the one who has to tell the band and the management, come on, let's cut down touring. We got to focus on the album. And, and now, you know, there was nothing else. So we could really put, you know, all the energy and all the focus on the making of the album.
From heaven, the seventh of creatures. Is the devil done? For the wrath of God to come. But I mean, as you are the main songwriter, do you when you're working on songs for a new album, do you treat that like a 9-to-5 kind of thing, or do you just sit around and wait for inspiration or whatever?
Well, I would say something in between. well, I try to stay on track. That's the 9-to-5 kind of element of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you don't go for it, it just doesn't happen. That's the, you know, one of the most well-known secrets of creativity. You just go for it. But on the other hand, it's not like I could really, you know, sit down and say, come on, next Monday I'm writing a ballad. It just does not work. I mean, creativity comes when it comes. But nevertheless, I've been more or less in my home studio, you know, every day during the last year, really being on track with the songwriting and everything. And I was really grateful for that, because it was kind of, you know, escaping the news. Like, you know, I tried to leave that behind. Whenever I went to the studio to write songs, I tried to, you know, be in a world of my own, and I was really grateful to have that.
Cool.
More than you know, in the past, where there, you know, everything was just taken for granted, and this time it was like, yeah, I was really happy to keeping myself busy with that.
Right. Well, you as a musician, as a guitar player, I mean, who were your first kind of idols that you looked to and listened to when you were a kid and when you were starting out playing?
Randy Rhoads.
Actually,
the first tape I got with metal music, there was nothing written on it. I found out way later, but on one side it was Diary of a Madman from Ozzy Osbourne, and there is this acoustic intro with the 12 string acoustic guitar, and I listened to that, and I was like, that was actually when I thought I want to become a guitar player, and one day I will be able to play this. And so yeah, Randy Rhoads was definitely one of my early inspirations.
Where did you get that tape from? How did you just come across it?
It was actually a friend from school. He just handed it out to me and said, I listen to that. That's the real deal. And I was like, he was right. there was on B-side, it was Seventh Son of a Seventh Son from Iron Maiden. And I actually, that was what infected me with heavy metal. From then on, it was, you know, everything else was indifferent. It was like, you know.
Yeah. secret right. Lost our soul to the dark and fire. We burn alive for all the time. We are the
Nicholas and I were just writing just, you know, a couple of hours ago. In a good way, we could hear a little bit of an Iron Maiden in the way you play guitar. We could hear.
Thanks a lot. Actually, as a matter of fact, we do have these conscious Iron Maiden tribute moments in our music. I mean, you take the title track, Call of the Wild, there's quite some pretty obvious Iron Maiden references going on. And that's what we always did. Also, in all our discography, we had these tribute moments in the music, which is just like our way of saying thank you to, you know, those bands that changed our lives.
Well, that's not, I mean, have you ever met any of the guys in Iron Maiden?
Funny enough, though, it happened that I haven't really met them, but that there was like some years ago at a festival, I was pretty upset about a guy spending a lot of time on a coffee machine, and it was in the morning, and I didn't have my first coffee yet, and I was really upset. And he turned around, and it obviously was Bruce Dickinson, and I was like, oh. I was so close to, you know, telling the guy to get off the coffee machine. Yeah, but actually I didn't even say a word. It was like, oh, come on.
No prayer, no crest, and no throne. sunken and bent, no rest, no repent, the bravest of hearts turn to stone.
And this record, it was produced by Jens Bogren. So you basically, throughout the years, you've been produced by Swedish people. Fredrik Nordström first, Jens Bogren the last couple records. What's the catch there? You obviously like that Swedish sound they get.
That's a good question. I don't know. I never thought about that. I mean, in the beginning, it was, I must admit that at the time we started out, I really liked lots of the productions Fredrik Nordström had done around that time, like the early Spiritual Beggars albums, the Dream Evil stuff. Yep. So that was an obvious choice. And it was not about Sweden. I mean, it was about the guy, you know, who really had this kind of attitude and the attitude and the sound. And so we went there. And well, for the first six records, we didn't change this team because it just clicked so well. I mean, we, you know, kind of had the same kind of humor and, you know, the same kind of attitude when it came to how things should turn out. And, well, then, yeah, I mean, with Jens Bogren as well, it's not about Sweden. It was just about, I just like the way he produces and the way he gives each band a very individual kind of sound. And so, yeah, there must be something about the Swedish guys, but, you know, I would say it's rather kind of coincidence.
Gotcha.
But then as well, I got to admit that I like Swedish landscapes. Actually, one of the best times I ever had in studio was when we recorded the Sacrament of Sin in Örebro.
Yep.
And there was just nothing around. It was just nature and nothing else. It was really like, I enjoyed the time there a lot.
Cool. Nice. Also, I mean, since you're the main songwriter of the band, I mean, what do the others in the band, what do they contribute to the songs? Or do you kind of like lay out the full ideas of the songs and, or how does it work in the band?
Usually that's what I do, but then again, it's like, you know, I'm not a drummer, I'm not a bass player. So, you know, I kind of demo things and then hand it over to the rest of the guys who, you know, give life to it, so to say. Like, I mean, Ruul, for example, he's a fantastic drummer. And it's just like, I mean, I do some stuff to, you know, show more or less what I've been thinking about. And then I let him just do whatever he feels like, you know, suits the thing. And that's very important because, I mean, after all, you know, most important thing about a song is that it breathes and it, there's just a lively feeling to it. And that's what comes when everybody's putting, you know, energy and an effort in it. So that's basically the influence of the rest of the band, like, you know, contributing from their point of view, so to say. And well, Attila, of course, has a special role with that. Like when I start writing songs, I kind of demo, you know, the song, but the one who comes first, the one I play stuff first to is Attila, because it's very important that he can relate to the song and he feels like, yes, I would really like to sing that.
Mm.
And actually Attila is the most honest person I know. And he's really straightforward. He's really like the kind of guy who tells you that's bullshit, I will not sing it. Most of the time he's right. That's so he's very good when it comes to, you know, giving very straight.
Baby,
But I mean, does it ever happen that the rest of the members turn down one of your ideas? Has that ever happened?
That's a good question.
Maybe they're just too afraid.
No. I mean, we're very good friends. But I mean, we're playing the same lineup since 15 years. I mean, we talk about everything. So that's not a thing. Actually, yes, there have been quite some songs. They have not been put down, but they ended up somewhere, but not on the album.
All right.
Yeah, but things like that happen. I mean, sometimes you just, you know, go for ideas, and at a certain point you feel like nobody is putting 100% in it, and then there's some truth to it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in saying that, you're obviously writing a little bit for Attila, especially, right? You got his vocal melodies, which you know he does, in mind when you write a song?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I know this guy pretty well, so I know pretty well what kind of stuff he would like to sing, and I even know him as good as knowing what he will come up with. So, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty flexible process, so to say. I demo some vocals to him and sometimes, you know, lead him towards his own ideas and stuff like it's, that's pretty intuitive, I would say.
It's a pretty solid lineup. Like you said, you guys have been together, except for one person, for close to 20 years now. Do you kind of feel you're still as healthy and strong as a band today?
Yes, more than ever, actually. More than ever. The thing is that over the years, especially when you do intense touring, you learn to know each other very, very well, and you learn to accept each other very well. That's one of the secrets. And the other thing is, we're simply good friends. I mean, more than being a band, we're friends. And that's actually, to me personally, I feel like that's the best basic you can have as a band. Like if I should tell somebody, I should give good advice to somebody who is about to found a band, I would tell him, don't look for good musicians, look for good friends. You know?
Because that's a big thing. You do that with your road crew as well. You know, it's kind of nearly as important if your crew, if your tech can do his job as well as being able to hang.
Definitely. I mean, that's what makes, you know, especially in touring, that's what makes touring family work, and that helps the shows and everything. So, you know, we will probably hardly ever get, you know, conflicts about songwriting or anything. And even if we had, it would not, you know, end up with somebody leaving the band or something, because, you know, you just don't leave your best friends.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever, I mean, have you ever had a big fight in any way within the band?
No, never in a serious way. I mean, of course, sometimes, especially on tour, you got these moments where, you know, doors are being slapped or something and somebody's totally upset. But like 10 minutes later, we're all, you know, hugging each other and laughing. I mean, that's not like, you know, arguments. So usually, no. It just works. Like, you know, you over the years, you learn to, you know, I know that if Attila had too little sleep, I better don't talk to the guy. That's like, you know, what you learn.
Yeah.
I do the same to Nicholas. If he doesn't sleep enough, I'm like, I don't want to talk to him.
Well, as Darren mentioned, you've been around almost for 20 years. I think it's 18 years this year. How do you look at that journey you've made as a band throughout the years?
Well, that's incredible. It's still like, you know, dream coming true. Totally. Though maybe the last year has become some sort of nightmarish twist, but still, I mean, you know, if in the very beginning of the band, you would have told us that one day we would, you know, play Wacken main stage at prime time and stuff like that, we would have told you, come on, you're insane. It's total dream coming true, definitely. And at the same time, it's always like, now that you mentioned it's almost 18 years, you feel like, come on, you mean 18 months, right?
Yeah.
Because time is, you know, it has been flying. It's really been, we've been busy all the time. And I mean, last year we released that Best of the Blessed, Best Of album. And when a record company approached us, like, guys, it's time for a Best Of album. We were like, nah, we've just started. I mean, come on, let's wait. And then they told us, yeah, but it's your 15th birthday as a band. And we were like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Where has time gone? And that's how it feels.
That's crazy.
Do you feel that the whole music scene at the moment is kind of shifting back towards, you know, being more being better for you guys? You know, Halloween just released a record which done amazing. It kind of seems like the scene is going back to rock and metal.
I don't know, to be honest. I'm not that observing, so to say. I mean, what I feel. Well, past couple of years, not even speaking about Powerwolf, but in general, I feel like the scene is pretty healthy. I mean, there's just so many bands coming up who are doing great. Like, you know, nowadays you got bands like, you know, Aim in the Marth or Sabaton or Powerwolf, Volbeat, like in very different shades of rock and metal, you got new bands coming up that are able to headline the big festivals. And that's something I'm pretty happy about for the whole scene. Like, you know, it really feels like, okay, yeah, the scene is developing and it's going on. There's new generations of fans coming. I mean, I was pretty excited when on our last tour for the previous album, The Sacrament of Sin, our audience was younger than ever. There were so many young and really dedicated metal fans on the show. So it was really like, I mean, me being an old metal fan since decades, it really was like, all right, things are continuing, you know.
Yeah,
that's pretty great.
That is great, because I think 10 years ago we were all wondering, hey, who's going to take over for from Metallica and Sabbath and Iron Maiden and all that kind of stuff. But now you seem to find those bands coming through.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'm from a fan perspective, the fan I am, I really feel like this is a great development for the whole scene.
Into the realm of demons, they walk with the Bible in.
also you mentioned playing the main stage at Wacken. I mean, that must be just like a great victory for the band. What was that like, playing a show like that?
It was pretty unreal. I mean, of course, that is like, it doesn't get bigger than that. It's right. Really like that's where you dreamed of being one day. And I would say that was really one of those moments I will remember for the rest of my life. But in the moment you're really playing it, there is so much going on. Like, we have all the pyrotechnics on stage and stuff. Yeah. What I remember most intensely about that show was the wind we had on stage and the pyros. And it was really like very tricky. We basically tried to survive. So that's what you deal with in the very situation. It was rather like when you left stage and you thought, whoa, what was that? And, you know, that's the thing. But in the moment itself, you're just busy and, you know, try to give your best and just be grateful for the chance you have. You
know? Yeah. Very cool.
Let's pull apart a couple of these songs. Opening track, Faster Than the Flame. That kind of feels not only an opening song for a record, it also feels like an opening show song as well.
And it definitely will be. Yep. It definitely will be. I mean, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is a very classical opening song. I mean, it couldn't be more trademark Powerwolf than this. And for me, that's the role a good opener needs to fulfill, so to say. Like, the opening song to me always is like handshake to the listener. Hey, here you are again. This is Powerwolf. In case you don't remember, this is how we sound. And I think that's what Faster Than a Flame does very well. And also, like, you know, speaking of the life situation, I can imagine this one's going to be a very energetic one.
Absolutely.
And of course, the title already asks for lots of pyrotechnics.
Yeah, definitely.
Saints and sinners lying broken, and all the world has fallen in my head. Graves and pyres still are blazing, alive or undead. Storms have gone and rain has fallen, and all the wildest prayers have been said. We will wait and we will guard you, alive or undead.
What about a song like Alive and Undead? That's that's different. Epic, very epic song.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's the second time that we actually dared to write a real classical rock ballad. I mean, on the Sacramento Sin, we had Where the Wild Wolves Have Gone, which was back then our very first ballad. And I didn't expect that much of the song back then, but it became an instant fan favorite, and it became a highlight of the live show as well. And there was a point where we felt like, okay, there must be something to it. Let's see. We obviously were able to write stuff like that. And Alive or Undead is even like even more of this very classical kind of ballad thing. The song was actually written without any guitar in it. It was I wrote it on a piano. And I wasn't even sure if it's going to end up on the album. But there again, it was Attila's very honest feedback. I mean, I played it to him and he was like, I insist on it. No question. This song will be on the album. So yeah, there it is.
Oh, then you have a track which is in German, Glaubenskraft. I mean, I took German lessons for 6 years. I actually had to Google what it was.
All right. All right. Yeah, I mean, the translation would probably say the force of faith or the power of faith.
Exactly.
Which usually is a positively connotated word. When we used it, we gave it a twist to have it like in a negative way. The song is a song, well, it's not about, but it's connected to the recent cases of abuse within the Catholic Church.
Right, yeah.
And it's not about the actual cases of abuse, but it's about the way these cases are dealt with.
Right.
I was totally puzzled and speechless when I found out that this is, that investigation of these cases is left to the church. It's not a federal law. It's not police or somebody researching. It's the church themselves who should deal with it. And I mean, we're not living in Middle Ages. We're living 2021.
Yeah.
And I was really, in this moment, I was totally speechless. I was like, come on, you're joking.
Yeah.
And that was actually the first time in the career of Powerwolf that I felt the need to write lyrics about an actual, let's say, social criticism. Like, I don't even see it like a religious kind of matter, because I mean, what happened there is basically, abuse of power. I mean, it's got nothing to do with faith or religion or whatever. It's
right.
Just like, yeah. And that's how this song came up. It's pretty, I mean, the German lyrics are pretty cynical, let's say like that. And it's actually one of the first real serious and songs with a message from Paul.
Warte Benedikt, zu betören, zwingt er sie mit Glaubenskraft, Reinheit zu zerstören. Er wird sie lehren, Glauben zu verwehren.
We got a couple of minutes left, so just to end it up, the artwork. Can you talk us through the artwork a little bit?
Yes, it was once again done by Sofia Dankova, who already did a couple of album artworks for us in the meantime. And she has really become like a part of the team, so to say. What I wanted to have and what I wanted to illustrate on the artwork is... say the movement between the poles, between good and evil, so to say, like, you know, with the demons on the balance and the angels on the other side, obviously being archetypes for the good and the evil. And it's not about the actual weight of things or whatever, but I wanted to display a scene where the wolf holding the balance is trying to, you know, hold that constantly moving balance, so to say, which to me says there is no, you know, black and white, good and evil. It's just like a big chaos going on. And that's probably what the album displays to me.
Right. Do you have a personal favorite on the album, on the new one?
That's very hard to say. I'm so close to it. currently, I really like Varkolak because it has... this straightforward power going, and it's actually a song I enjoy at least when driving the car. This is a song that really, you know, entertains me quite well. But you know, I'm probably very, very close to it, and I have listened to the songs thousands of times, so
yeah.
Currently I try to avoid listening to it, to be honest.
But are there songs that you wrote for this record that you didn't use, so they're still sitting around?
Yeah, a couple of. I mean, that always happens. But sometimes you don't use them for a good reason. Sometimes you get back to them and think, whoa, why didn't we use them? So, but I usually let them rest for a while. It's like rather something I will revisit half a year later and see, you know, has there been something we might even, you know, take on again and see where it goes, or I get back to it and think, oh, thanks God we didn't use it. I don't know.